This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Happy Ever After by Nora Roberts, performed by Angela Daw. To my guys, Bruce, Dan, Jason, and Logan. Love sought is good, but given unsought is better. William Shakespeare. Beauty from order springs. William King. Prologue. Grief came in waves, hard and choppy, buffeting and breaking the heart. Other days the waves were slow and swamping, threatening to drown the soul. People, good caring people, claimed time would heal. Parker hoped they were right, but as she stood on her bedroom terrace in the late summer sun, months after the sudden, shocking deaths of her parents, those capricious waves continued to roll. She had so much, she reminded herself. Her brother, and she didn't know if she'd have survived this grieving time without Dell, had been a rock to cling to in that wide, wide ocean of shock and sorrow. Her friends, Mac, Emma, Laurel, a part of her life, a part of her, since childhood. They'd been the glue mending and holding all the shattered pieces of her world. She had the constant, unshakable support of their longtime housekeeper, Mrs. Grady, her island of comfort. She had her home. The beauty and elegance of the Brown estate seemed deeper, sharper to her somehow, knowing she wouldn't see her parents strolling through the gardens. She'd never again run downstairs and find her mother laughing in the kitchen with Mrs. G, or hear her father wheeling a deal in his home office. Instead of learning to ride those waves, she'd felt herself being swept deeper and deeper down into the dark. Time, she'd determined, needed to be used and pushed and moved. She thought, hoped, she'd found a way, not only to use that time, but to celebrate what her parents had given her, to unite those gifts with family and friendships. To be productive, she mused as the first spicy scents of coming autumn stirred the air. The Browns worked. They built and they produced and they never, never sat back to laze on accomplishments. Her parents would have expected her to do no less than those who'd come before her. Her friends might think she'd lost her mind, but she'd researched, calculated, and outlined a solid business plan, a sturdy model, and with Dell's help, a fair and reasonable legal contract. Time to swim, she told herself. She simply wouldn't sink. She walked back into the bedroom, picked up the four thick packets she'd set on her dresser, one for each of them for the meeting, though she hadn't told her friends they were coming to a meeting. She paused, took a moment to tie back her glossy brown hair in a tail, then simply stared into her own eyes, willing a spark to light in the deep blue. She could make this work. No, no, they could make this work. She just had to convince them first. Downstairs, she found Mrs. Grady putting the finishing touches on the meal. The sturdy woman turned from the stove, gave her a wink. Ready? Prepared anyway. I'm nervous. Is it silly to be nervous? They're my closest friends in the world. It's a big step you're looking to take. A big one you'll ask them to take. You'd be foolish if you weren't a bit nervous. She stepped over, took Parker's face in her hands. My money's on you. Go on out. I've gone a little fancy, so you'll have hors d'oeuvres and wine on the terrace. My girls are all grown up. She wanted to be, but God, there was a child inside her who wanted her mom and dad. The comfort, the love, the security. Outside, she set the packets on a table, then crossed over to take the wine out of its cooler, pour herself a glass. Then simply stood, holding the glass, looking out in the softening light over the gardens to the pretty little pond and the reflection of the willows mirrored on its surface. God, do I want some of that! Laurel bolted out, her sunny blonde hair brutally short, a new look her friend already regretted. She hadn't changed out of her uniform from her position as dessert chef at an upscale local restaurant. Her eyes, bright and blue, rolled as she poured her wine. Who knew when I changed my schedule to make our girl night we'd get a last-minute lunch reservation for 20? The kitchen was a madhouse all afternoon, Mrs. G's kitchen now. She let out a huge groan as she dropped down to sit after hours on her feet. It's an oasis of calm that smells like heaven. What's for dinner? I didn't ask. Doesn't matter. Laura waved it away. But if Emma and Mac are late, I'm starting without them. She spotted the stack of packets. What's all that? Something that can't start without them. Laurel, do you want to go back to New York? Laurel eyed her over the rim of her glass. Are you kicking me out? I guess I want to know what you want. If you're satisfied with how things are. You moved back for me after the accident, and I'm taking it a day at a time, and I'll figure it out. Right now, not having a plan's working for me, okay? Well, she broke off as Mac and Emma came out together, laughing. Emma, she thought, so beautiful with her mass of hair curling madly, her dark, exotic eyes bright with fun. Mac, her bold red hair choppy in tufts, green eyes wickedly amused, lean and long in her jeans and black shirt. What's the joke? Laurel demanded. Men. Mac set down the plates of brie en croûte and spinach tartlets Mrs. Grady had shoved into her hands on the way through the kitchen. The two of them who thought they could arm wrestle for Emma. It was kind of sweet, Emma insisted. They were brothers and came into the shop for flowers for their mother's birthday. One thing led to the other. Guys come into the studio all the time. Mac popped a sugared red grape into her mouth from the bowl already on the table. None of them ever arm wrestle each other for a date with me. Some things never change, Laurel said, raising her glass to Emma. Some things do, Parker spoke out. She had to start, had to move. That's why I asked you all to come tonight. Emma paused as she reached for the brie. Is something wrong? No, but I wanted to talk to you all at once. Determined, Parker poured wine for Mac and Emma. Let's sit down. Uh-oh, Mac warned. No uh-ohs, Parker insisted. I want to say first, I love you all so much and have forever, and will forever. We've shared so much, good and bad, and when things were at their worst, I knew you'd be there. We're all there for each other. Emma leaned over and laid a hand on Parker's. That's what friends do. Yes, it is. I want you to know how much you mean to me, and want you to know that if any of you don't want to try what I'm about to propose, for any reason at all, it changes nothing between us. She held up a hand before anyone could speak. Let me start this way. Emma, you want your own florist business one day, right?
It's always been the dream. I mean, I'm happy working in the shop, and the boss gives me a lot of leeway, but I hope down the road to have my own, but...
No buts yet. Mac, you've got too much talent, too much creativity to spend every day taking passport photos and posed kid shots.
My talent knows no bounds, Mac said lightly, but a girl's gotta eat.
You'd rather have your own photography studio.
I'd rather have Justin Timberlake arm-wrestling Ashton Kutcher for me, too, and it's just as likely.
Laurel, you studied in New York and Paris with the aim of becoming a pastry chef.
An international sensation of a pastry chef.
And you've settled for working at the Willows. She swallowed a bite of her spinach tart.
Well, hey, part of that settling was to be here for me after we lost Mom and Dad.
I studied, Parker continued, with the goal of starting my own business. I always had an idea of what it would be, but it seemed like a pipe dream, one I never shared with any of you. But over these last months, it's begun to feel more reachable, more right.
For Christ's sake, Parker, what is it? Laurel demanded.
I want us to go into business together. The four of us, with each of us running our own end of it, according to our field of interest and expertise, while merging them together under one umbrella, so to speak.
Go into business? Emma echoed.
You remember how we used to play Wedding Day? How we'd all take turns playing parts and wearing costumes, planning the themes?
I liked marrying Harold best.
Mac smiled over the memory of the long-departed Brown family dog.
He was so handsome and loyal.
We could do it for real. Make a business out of Wedding Day.
Providing costumes and cupcakes and very patient dogs for little girls? Laurel suggested.
No. By providing a unique and amazing venue, this house, these grounds, spectacular cakes and pastries, heartbreaking bouquets and flowers,
beautiful creative photographs. And for my part, someone who'll oversee every detail to make a wedding or other important event the most perfect day of the client's lives. She barely took a breath. I already have countless contacts through my parents. Caterers, wine merchants, limo services, salons, everything. And what I don't have, I'll get. A full-service wedding and event business, the four of us as equal partners.
A wedding business?
Emma's eyes went dreamy.
It sounds wonderful, but how could we...
I have a business model. I have figures and charts and answers to legal questions if you've got them. Dell helped me work it out.
He's okay with it? Laurel asked.
Delaney's okay with you turning the estate, your home, into a business? He's completely behind me on this. And his friend Jack's willing to help by redesigning the pool house into a photographer's studio with living quarters above it, and the guest house into a flower shop with an apartment. We can turn the auxiliary kitchen here into your workspace, Laurel.
We'd live here on the estate?
You'd have that option, Parker told Mac. It's going to be a lot of work, and it would be more efficient for all of us to be on site. I'll show you the figures, the model, the projection charts, the works. But there's no point if any of you just don't like the basic concept. And if you don't, well, I'll try to talk you into it, Parker added with a laugh. Then if you hate it, I'll let it go.
The hell you will.
Laurel scooped a hand through her short cap of hair. How long have you been working this out?
Seriously, actively?
About 3 months. I had to talk to Dell and Mrs. G, because without their support it would never fly. But I wanted to put it all together before springing it on you.
It's business, Parker said.
It would be our business, so it needs to be formed that way from the ground up.
Our business,
Emma repeated.
Weddings. What's happier than a wedding?
Or crazier, Laurel put in.
The four of us can handle crazy. Parks?
Mac's dimples winked as she held out a hand.
I'm so in.
You can't commit until you've seen the model, the figures.
Yes, I can, Mac corrected. I want this.
Me too.
Emma laid her hand on theirs. Laurel took a breath, held it, released.
I guess that makes it unanimous.
And she put her hand on theirs.
We'll kick wedding ass.
Chapter 1. Crazy Bride called at 5:28 a.m.
I had a dream,
she announced while Parker lay in the dark with her BlackBerry.
A dream?
An amazing dream, so real, so urgent, so full of color and life. I'm sure it means something. I'm going to call my psychic, but I wanted to talk it over with you first.
Okay.
With the grace of experience, Parker reached over, turned her bedside lamp on low.
What was the dream about, Sabina?
She asked as she picked up the pad and pen beside the lamp.
Alice in Wonderland.
You dreamed about Alice in Wonderland?
Specifically, the Mad Hatter's tea party.
Disney or Tim Burton?
What?
Nothing.
Parker shook back her hair, noted key words.
Go on.
Well, there was music and a banquet of food. I was Alice, but I wore my wedding dress, and Chase looked absolutely amazing in a morning coat. The flowers, oh, they were spectacular. And all of them singing and dancing. Everyone was so happy, toasting us, clapping. Angelica was dressed as the Red Queen and playing a flute.
Parker noted down MOH for Angelica, the maid of honor, then continued to record other members of the wedding party. The best man as the White Rabbit, the mother of the groom as the Cheshire Cat, father of the bride, the March Hare. She wondered what Sabina had eaten, drunk, or smoked before going to bed.
Isn't it fascinating, Parker?
Absolutely.
As had been the pattern of tea leaves that had determined Sabina's bridal colors, the tarot reading that had forecast her honeymoon destination, the numerology that had pointed to the only possible date for her wedding.
I think maybe my subconscious and the fates are telling me I need to do an Alice theme for the wedding, with costumes.
Parker closed her eyes. Well, she'd have said, and would say now, that the Mad Hatter's tea party suited Sabina to the ground, the event was less than 2 weeks away. The decor, the flowers, the cake and desserts, the menu, the works, already chosen.
Hmm, Parker said to give herself a moment to think. That's an interesting idea.
The dream says to me, Parker interjected. The celebrational, magical, fairy tale atmosphere you've already chosen. It tells me you were absolutely right.
Really?
Completely. It tells me you're excited and happy and can't wait for your day. Remember, the Mad Hatter held his tea party every day. It's telling you that your life with Chase will be a daily celebration.
Oh, of course!
And Sabina, when you stand in front of the looking glass in the bride's suite on your wedding day, you'll be looking at yourself with Alice's young, adventurous, happy heart. Damn, I'm good, Parker thought as the crazy bride sighed.
You're right, you're right, you're absolutely right. I'm so glad I called you. I knew you'd know.
That's what we're here for. It's going to be a beautiful wedding, Sabina. Your perfect day. After she hung up, Parker lay back a moment, but when she closed her eyes, the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, Disney version, ran manically in her head. Resigned, she rose, crossed over to the French doors to the terrace of the room that had once been her parents'. She opened them to the morning air, took a deep breath of dawn as the sun took its first peek over the horizon. The last stars winked out in a world perfectly, wonderfully still, like a breath held. The upside of crazy brides and those of that ilk was wakefulness just before dawn, when it seemed nothing and no one but she stirred. Nothing and no one but she had this moment when night passed its torch to day, and the silvery light sheened to pearl that would shimmer, when that breath released, to pale, lustrous gold. She left the doors open when she walked back into the bedroom. Taking a band from the hammered silver box on her dresser, she pulled her hair back into a tail. She shed her nightshirt for cropped yoga pants and a support tank, chose a pair of running shoes off the shelf in the casual section of her ruthlessly organized closet. She hooked her BlackBerry to her waistband, plugged in her headphones, then headed out of her room toward her home gym. She hit the lights, flipped on the news on the flat screen, listening with half an ear as she took a few moments to stretch. She set the elliptical for her usual 3-mile program. Halfway through the first mile, she smiled. God, she loved her work. Loved the crazy brides, the sentimental brides, the persnickety brides, even the monster brides. She loved the details and demands, the hopes and dreams, the constant affirmation of love and commitment she helped to personalize for every couple. Nobody, she determined, did it better than vows. What she, Mac, Emma, and Laurel had taken head-on one late summer evening was now everything and more than they'd imagined. And now, she thought as her smile widened, they were planning weddings for Mac in December, Emma in April, Laurel in June. Her friends were the brides now, and she couldn't wait to dig deeper into those fine details. Mac and Carter, traditional with artistic twists. Emma and Jack, romance, romance, romance. Laurel and Dell, God, her brother was marrying her best friend. Elegant yet streamlined. Oh, she had ideas. She'd hit mile two when Laurel came in. Fairy lights. Acres and miles and rivers of tiny white fairy lights all through the gardens, in the willows, on the arbors, the pergola. Laurel blinked, yawned.
Huh?
Your wedding, romantic, elegant, abundance without fuss.
Huh.
Laurel, her swing of blonde hair clipped up, stepped on the machine next to Parker's. I'm just getting used to being engaged. I know what you like. I've worked up a basic overview.
Of course you have.
But Laurel smiled.
Where are you?
She craned her head, scanned the readout on Parker's machine.
Shit! Who called and when?
Crazy bride, just shy of 5:30. She had a dream. If you tell me she dreamed a new design for the cake, I'm going to... Not to worry, I fixed it.
How could I have doubted you?
She eased through her warm-up, then kicked in. Dell's going to put his house on the market.
What? When? Well, after he talks to you about it, but I'm here, you're here, so I'm talking to you first. We talked about it last night. He'll be back from Chicago tonight, by the way, so... He'd move back in here if that's okay with you.
First, it's his house as much as mine. Second, you're staying. Her eyes stung, shined. You're staying, Parker repeated. I didn't want to push, and I know Dell's got a great house, but, oh God, Laurel, I didn't want you to move out. Now you won't. I love him so much I may be the next crazy bride, but I didn't want to move out either. My wing's more than big enough. It practically is a house. And he loves this place as much as you, as much as all of us. Dell's coming home, Parker murmured. Her family, she thought, everyone she loved and cherished, would soon be together. And that, she knew, was what made a home. By 8:59, Parker was dressed in a sharply tailored suit the color of ripe eggplants, with a hint of frill on her crisp white shirt. She spent precisely 55 minutes answering emails, texts, and phone calls, refreshing notes in various client files, checking and confirming deliveries with subcontractors on upcoming events. At the stroke of 10, she walked down from her third-floor office for her first on-site appointment of the day. She'd already researched the potential client. Bride, Deanne Hagar, local artist whose dreamy fantasy work had been reproduced in posters and greeting cards. Groom, Wyatt Culpepper, landscape designer. Both came from old money, banking and real estate, respectively, and both were the youngest child of twice-divorced parents. Minimal digging had netted her the data that the newly engaged couple had met at a green fest, shared a fondness for bluegrass music, and loved to travel. She had mined other nuggets from websites, Facebook, magazine and newspaper interviews, and friends of friends of friends, and had already decided on the overall approach of the initial tour, which would include the mothers of both. She scanned areas as she did a quick pass-through on the main level, pleased with Emma's romantic flower displays. She popped into the family kitchen where, as expected, Mrs. Grady was putting the finishing touches on the coffee tray, the iced sun tea Parker had requested, and a platter of fresh fruit highlighted with Laurel's tissue-thin butter cookies. "Looks perfect, Mrs. G."
"It's ready when you are."
"Let's go ahead and set it up in the main parlor. If they want the tour straight off, maybe we'll move it outside. It's beautiful out." Parker moved in to help, but Mrs. Grady waved her off.
"I've got it. I just put it together that I know the bride's first stepmother."
"Really?"
"Didn't last long, did she?"
Movements brisk, Mrs. Grady transferred the trays to a tea cart.
"Never made the second wedding anniversary, if I remember right. Pretty woman and sweet enough. Dim as a 5-watt bulb, but good-hearted."
Mrs. Grady flicked her fingertips over the skirt of her bib apron.
"She married again, some Spaniard, and moved to Barcelona."
"I don't know why I spend any time on the internet when I can just plug into you."
"If you had, I'd have told you Mac's mother had a flirt with the bride's daddy between wives 2 and 3.
"Linda, not a surprise."
"Well, we can all be grateful it didn't take. I like the girl's pictures," she added as they rolled the cart toward the parlor.
"You've seen them?"
Mrs. Grady winked. "You're not the only one who knows how to use the internet. There's the bell. Go on. Snag us another client."
"That's the plan." Parker's first thought was the bride looked like the Hollywood version of a fantasy artist, with her waist-length tumble of gilded red hair and almond-shaped green eyes. Her second was what a beautiful bride Deanne would make, and on the heels of it, just how much she wanted a part of that. "Good morning. Welcome to Vows. I'm Parker."
"Brown, right?"
Wyatt shot out a hand.
"I just want to say, I don't know who designed your landscape, but they're a genius, and I wish it had been me."
"Thank you so much. Please come in."
"My mother, Patricia Farrell. Deanne's mom, Karen Bliss."
"It's lovely to meet all of you." Parker took stock quickly. Wyatt took charge, but genially, and all three women let him. "Why don't we have a seat in the parlor for a few minutes and get acquainted?" But Deanne was already wandering the spacious foyer, scanning the elegant staircase. "I thought it would be stuffy. I thought it would feel stuffy." She turned back, her pretty summer skirt swaying. "I studied your website. Everything looked perfect, looked beautiful, but I thought, no, too perfect. I'm still not convinced it's not too perfect, but it's not stuffy, not in the least."
"What my daughter might have said in many fewer words, Ms. Brown, is you have a lovely home."
"Parker," she said.
"And thank you, Mrs. Bliss. Coffee?" she invited. "Or iced sun tea?"
"Could we just look around first?" Deanne asked her. Especially outside, as Wyatt and I want an outdoor wedding. Why don't we start outside, then circle back through? You're looking at next September, Parker continued as she moved to the door leading to the side terrace. A year from now, that's why we're looking at this time, so we can see how the landscape, the gardens, the light all work. We have several areas that can be utilized for outdoor weddings. The most popular, especially for larger events, is the West Terrace and Pergola. But...
But?
Wyatt echoed as they strolled around the house. When I see the two of you, I picture something a little different. Something we do now and then. The pond, she said as they rounded to the back. The willows, the roll of the lawns. I see a flower-strewn arbor and white runners flowing like a river between the rows of chairs, white again, strung with flowers. All of that reflected in the water of the pond. Banquets of flowers everywhere, but not formal. More natural arrangements. Cottage garden flowers, but in mad abundance. My partner and our floral designer, Emmeline, is an artist. Deanne's eyes took on a gleam. I loved what I saw of her work on the website. You can speak with her directly if you decide to have your wedding with us, or even if you're just considering it. I also see fairy lights glittering, candles flickering. Everything natural, organic, but sumptuous, sparkling. Titania's bower. You'll wear something flowing, she said to Deanne. Something fairy-like, with your hair down, no veil, but flowers in your hair.
Yes, you're very good, aren't you?
It's what we do here. Tailor the day to reflect what you want most, what you are, individually and to each other. You don't want formal, but soft and dreamy, neither contemporary nor old-fashioned. You want you, and a bluegrass trio playing you down the aisle.
Never-ending love, Wyatt supplied with a grin. We've already picked it. Will your artist of a florist work with us, not only on the wedding landscape, but the bouquets and all that?
Every step of the way. It's entirely about you and creating the perfect, even too perfect, day for you, she said with a smile for Deanne.
I love the pond, Deanne murmured as they stood on the terrace looking out. I love the image you've just painted in my head.
Because the image is you, baby.
Karen Bliss took her daughter's hand.
It's absolutely you.
Dancing on the lawn?
Wyatt's mother glanced over.
I checked out the website, too, and I know you have a gorgeous ballroom, but maybe they could have dancing out here.
Absolutely. Either, both, however you want it done. If you're interested, we can set up a full consult with my partners, discuss those areas and more details.
What do you say we take a look at the rest?
Wyatt leaned down to kiss Deanne's temple. At 4:30, Parker was back at her desk refining spreadsheets, charts, schedules. In concession to the end of the day's appointments, her suit jacket hung on the back of her chair, and her shoes sat under the desk. She calculated another hour's paperwork and considered the day a blissfully light one. The rest of the week promised to be insanely jammed, but with any luck, by 6 she'd be able to change into casual clothes and treat herself to a glass of wine and actually sit down to a meal. She went, at the rap on her door jamb.
Got a minute?
Mac asked.
I happen to have several on me. You can have one.
Parker swiveled in her chair as Mac hauled in 2 shopping bags.
I missed you in the gym this morning, but I see you've continued your weightlifting.
Grinning, Mac flexed.
Pretty good, huh?
You're ripped, Elliot. You'll have show-stopping arms on wedding day. Mac dropped into a chair.
I have to do justice to the dress you found me. Listen, I've sworn not to become mad bride or weepy bride or other various aspects of annoying bride, but it's getting close and I just need assurances from the goddess of all wedding planners.
It's going to be perfect and exactly right.
I changed my mind on the first dance again.
It doesn't matter. You can change it up until the countdown.
But it's symptomatic, Parks. I can't seem to stick to a basic item like a damn song.
It's an important song.
Is Carter taking dance lessons?
Parker widened her eyes.
Why would you ask me?
I knew it. God, that's so sweet. You got Carter to take dance lessons so he won't step on my feet during our first dance.
Carter asked me to arrange it as a surprise, so don't spoil it.
It makes me gooey.
Her shoulders lifted and fell with her happy sigh.
Maybe I can't stick because I keep going gooey. Anyway, I had that off-site engagement shoot this afternoon.
How'd it go?
Aces. They're so damn cute, I wanted to marry both of them. Then I did something stupid on the way home. I stopped by the shoe department at Nordstrom, which I have already cleverly deduced by the shopping bags. I bought 10 pair. I'm taking most of them back, but why?
Mac narrowed her green eyes.
Don't encourage the lunatic. I couldn't stick again. I already bought my wedding shoes, right? Didn't we all agree they're perfect?
Stunning and perfect.
Exactly, so why did I buy 4 alternate pair?
I thought you said 10.
The other 6 are for the honeymoon. Well, 4 of them. Then I really needed a new pair of work shoes, and they were so cute I got 1 pair in copper and another in this wild green, but that's not important.
Let me see them.
The wedding shoes first, and don't say anything until I line them all up.
Mac held up both hands.
Total poker face, no expression, no sound.
I'll turn around, work on this spreadsheet.
Better you than me, Mac muttered, then got to work.
Parker ignored the rustling, the sighs, until Mac gave her the go-ahead. Turning, Parker scanned the shoes lined up on a work counter. Rose, crossed over, scanned again. She kept her face blank, said nothing as she picked up a shoe, examined it, set it back, moved to the next.
You're killing me, Mac told her.
Quiet. She walked away to take out a folder, slipping out the photo taken of Mac in her wedding dress. She took it back to the selection of shoes, nodded.
Yes, definitely.
She picked up a pair. You'd be a lunatic not to wear these.
Really?
Mac slapped her hands together.
Really? Because those were the ones, the ones, but I kept waffling back and forth and sideways. Ooh, look at them. The heels, they're all sparkly, and the ankle straps, so sexy, but not too sexy, right?
The perfect blend of sparkly, sexy, and sophisticated. I'll take the others back.
But
I'll return them because you've found the ultimate wedding shoe and need to stick. You have to remove the others from your sight and stay out of the shoe department until after the wedding.
You're so wise.
Parker inclined her head. I am indeed wise, and as such, I do believe this pair may very well be Emma's wedding shoe. I'll exchange it for her size, and we'll see.
Oh, again, wise points.
Mac picked up the pair Parker indicated.
More romantic, more princessy. This is great. I'm exhausted.
Leave the wedding shoes, all of them, with me. Take the others. Oh, and check your calendar when you get home. I added in consults.
How many?
Out of the 5 tours I did today, we have 3 full consults. One needs to talk it over with Daddy, who's footing the bill, and one who's still shopping around.
3 out of 5?
Mac did a double fist pump.
Woohoo!
I'm betting 4 out of 5 because Daddy's girl wants us, and wants us bad. The 5th, the bride just isn't ready to decide. Her mother wants us, which my instincts tell me is a strike against us in this case. We'll see.
Well, I'm psyched. 3 fulls, and I've bagged the perfect wedding shoes. I'm going home to give my guy a big wet kiss, and he won't know it's because he's taking dance lessons. Thanks, Park. See you later.
Parker sat, studied the shoes on the counter. She thought of Mac rushing home to Carter. Thought of Laurel greeting Dell when he came home after a 2-day business conference in Chicago. And Emma maybe sitting out on her little patio, having wine with Jack and dreaming of her own wedding flowers. She swiveled around to stare at the spreadsheet on the screen. She had her work, she reminded herself. Work she loved. And that's what mattered right now. Her BlackBerry signaled, and a glance at the readout told her another bride needed to talk.
"I've always got you,"
she murmured, then answered. "Hi, Brenna, what can I do for you?" Chapter 2. Parker dealt with the shoes, and because she was on a tight schedule, she only indulged in 1 pair for herself. She met a bride, the bride's favorite aunt, who would give her away, and the bride's maid of honor for lunch to discuss wedding favors, music, and, coincidentally, shoes. She swung by the bridal boutique where, at the request of another bride, she assisted in the finalization of the gowns for the wedding party, gave her input on underpinnings and headdresses, met yet another bride and entourage to pore over linen choices. Then she dashed off to Coffee Talk for a quick meeting with Sherry McGuire, Carter's delightful sister, whose wedding was imminent.
"Diane's being a poop,"
Sherry announced and pouted with her chin on her fist.
The wedding's not about your sister.
I know, but she's still being a poop. A total downer, a kill-all-the-joy bitch festia.
Sherry, in less than 2 weeks you're marrying the man you love, correct? The light sparked in Sherry's summer blue eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Everything about the day has been designed to make you happy, to celebrate that love, correct?
God, it really has. You, all of you, have been amazing.
Then be happy. Celebrate. And if your sister's cranky about it, I have to say that's her problem.
That's exactly what Nick says.
Sherry tossed up her hands, then shoved them through her sunny blonde hair.
And my mother, but... She says she's not coming to the rehearsal or the rehearsal dinner.
The poop, Parker thought, but showed only light sympathy. I'm sorry, why not?
She's not in the wedding, she says. Well, she didn't want to be. I asked her to be the matron of honor, but she didn't want that. Didn't see why she should have to go through all that fuss, why I wanted a matron and a maid of honor.
Your sister and your oldest closest friend.
Exactly.
Sherry thumped a fist on the table, then jabbed a spoon in the whipped cream on her fancy coffee.
So now she doesn't see why she should get a sitter and come to the dinner. I said the kids were invited too, but then it's how she's not going to ride herd on them all night at a rehearsal dinner, then turn around and ride herd on them at the wedding. Too much stimulation for them, she says, too exhausting for her. So I said we'd pay for the damn sitter then, so she and Sam could have the night out, and she got huffy about that. I can't win.
Stop trying to.
But she's my sister, Parker. It's my wedding.
Tears sparkled as emotion trembled in Sherry's voice. And this, Parker thought, had been, throughout the entire process, the most cheerful, delightful, and flexible of brides. Damn if she'd see a moment of it spoiled for her.
I'll speak with her.
But,
Sherry. Parker laid a hand over hers. Trust me.
Okay.
Sherry sucked in a breath, blew it out as she blinked back the tears.
Sorry, I'm an idiot.
You're not.
To emphasize it, Parker gave Sherry's hand a quick, firm squeeze.
Let me say, because I know a lot of idiots, you just don't make the cut. So do me a favor and put this out of your mind for now. Just put it aside and concentrate on how good things are and how wonderful they will be.
You're right. I knew you'd make me feel better.
That's what I'm here for.
Under the table, Parker turned her wrist to check the time. She could spare another 10 minutes.
So you're all set on your spa and salon dates, your final fittings?
The 10 eked to nearly 15, but she'd built time in to cushion the trip back home for the early evening consult. Even the rain that splattered as she walked back to the car didn't worry her. She had plenty of time to drive home, freshen up, grab the files, check on the refreshments, and run through the client data with her partners. But to save time, she plugged in her phone and used the voice controls to contact Laurel.
Icing at vows.
Hey, I'm on my way in. Are we set?
Coffee, tea, champagne, simple yet fabulous hors d'oeuvres, chocolates. Emma's already switched the flowers. We all have, or will have, our sample albums. Wow, is that thunder?
Yeah, it just opened up.
Parker shot a glance to the angry boil of clouds.
I'll be home in about 20. Bye.
The storm roared through, wild and vicious, and she thought just how much she'd have enjoyed it if she'd been inside. Soon would be, she thought, but adjusted her speed cautiously as rain hurled against the windshield. She rolled along the road toward home, going over details about the new clients in her head. It happened fast, all in a rain-washed blur. The dog, deer, raced across the road. The oncoming car swerved to avoid it, fishtailed. Parker eased off the gas, tapped her brakes, even as her heart leveled again when the animal cleared the road. But the oncoming car fishtailed again, straight at her. Once again her heart flipped. With no choice, she cut the wheel hard to avoid the collision. Her car skidded, bucked onto the shoulder of the road. Her rear end shimmied around while the car jolted side to side. The oncoming car nipped by her, and just kept going. She sat, her hands glued to the wheel, her knees shaking, and her heart a drumbeat in her ears.
Okay, she breathed. I'm okay, not hurt. I'm not hurt.
Since she wanted to stay that way, she ordered herself to steer the car fully onto the shoulder until the shaking stopped. Someone else could come along and broadside her. The best she could manage was a thumping limp.
Flat tire, she thought, and closed her eyes. Perfect. Grabbing her fold-up umbrella from the glove box, she got out to survey the damage. Oh, not a flat, she murmured. A flat's just not good enough. Two goddamn shredded tires. She rolled her eyes to the heavens, which, she noted bitterly, were already clearing. She found the faint shimmer of a rainbow arching in a miserly glint of sun personally insulting under the circumstances. She would almost certainly be late for the consult, but she wouldn't arrive soaking wet. Bright side. She climbed back in, called for roadside assistance. Because her hand still shook, she opted to wait another few minutes before calling home. She'd just say she had a flat, she decided, and was waiting for the guy to come change it. She could damn well have changed a flat tire if she'd had to, she mused, but she only had one spare. Pressing a hand on her jumpy belly, she thumbed a Tums out of the roll in her purse. Probably 30 minutes for the tow truck, if she was lucky. Then she'd have to ask the driver to take her home, or call a cab. She wasn't going to call home and ask one of her partners to come get her and let them see the car. Not before a consult. A cab, she decided. If she called a cab, it would be on its way here along with a tow truck. More efficient that way. If she'd just stop shaking, she could get everything in order again. Deal with the situation. She heard the roar of an engine, and her gaze flew to the rearview mirror. Already slowing down, she realized as she let air out again. A motorcycle, which certainly had more than enough room to get around her. Instead, it pulled up behind. Good Samaritan, she thought. Not everyone was a negligent ass like the other driver had been. She pushed her door open to tell the biker she'd already called for help and stepped out, and saw Malcolm Cavanaugh pull off the black helmet. It just got better and better, she thought. Now she was being rescued by her brother's friend, their current mechanic, a man who irritated her more often than not. She watched him survey the situation while the thinning rain dampened his black, unkempt hair. His jeans were ripped at the knee, stained with oil on the thighs. The black shirt and leather jacket added to the image of sexy bad boy with a build for sin. And eyes, she thought as they met hers, that challenged a woman to commit one. More than one.
Are you hurt?
No. He gave her a long look as if deciding for himself.
Your airbag didn't deploy.
I wasn't going that fast. I didn't hit anything. I avoided getting hit by a moron who swerved to avoid a dog, then kept coming at me. I had to cut toward the shoulder and...
Where is he? The other driver?
He just kept going. Who does that? How can anyone do that? Saying nothing, he reached by her, pulled her bottle of water out of the cup holder.
Sit down. Drink some water.
I'm okay. I'm just angry. I'm really, really angry. He gave her a little poke, and she sat sideways on the front seat.
How's your spare?
It's never been used. It's new. I got all new tires last winter. Damn it.
You're gonna need a couple new ones now.
He crouched for a moment so those sharp green eyes were level with hers. It took her a moment to realize the movement and the matter-of-fact tone of his voice were probably designed to keep her calm. Since it seemed to be working, she had to appreciate it.
We'll match them with what you've got. He continued. I want to check the car out while I'm at it.
Yes, fine, okay. She drank, realizing her throat was raw. Thanks, I'm just...
Really, really angry.
He finished as he straightened.
I don't blame you.
And I'm going to be late. I hate being late. I've got a consult at home in, oh hell, 20 minutes. I need to call a cab.
No, you don't.
He looked back down the road at the approaching tow truck. That was fast. You were fast. I didn't expect... She paused as her brain started to function again. Were you out this way on your bike?
I am out this way on my bike,
he corrected.
Since you called in for service due to being run off the road. You didn't call the cops?
I didn't get the plate or even the kind of car. And that galled her. Just galled. It happened so fast and it was raining and...
And it would be a waste of time. Still, Bill's going to take pictures and report it for you.
She pressed the heel of her hand to her forehead. Okay, thanks. Really, thank you. I guess I'm a little rattled.
First time I've seen you that way. Hold on.
He walked to the truck, and while he spoke with his driver, she sipped the water and ordered herself to settle down. Everything was fine, just fine.
The driver would give her a ride home, and she wouldn't even be late. 10 minutes home, 5 minutes to freshen up. She'd give the simple flat tire story after the consult. Everything was just fine. She looked up as Malcolm walked back and handed her a fire engine red helmet.
You'll need this.
Why?
Safety first, Legs.
He put it on her head himself, and his grin edged ever so slightly toward smirk.
Cute.
What? Her eyes popped wide. If you think I'm getting on that motorcycle...
You want to make your meeting? Keep your rep as Ms. Prompt and Efficient? Rain stopped, you won't even get wet.
Again he reached past her, but this time their bodies bumped. He pulled out again, holding her purse.
You'll want this. Let's go.
Can't he just drop me off? Mal strapped her purse to the bike, swung a leg over.
You're not afraid to ride a bike, are you? And for what, about 6 miles?
Of course I'm not afraid. He put on his helmet, turned on the bike, gave the engine a couple of muscular revs.
Clock's ticking.
Oh, for God's... She bit off the words, clipped her way to the bike in her heels, and, keeping her teeth gritted, managed to get a leg over the bike behind him. Her skirt hiked up high on her thighs.
Nice.
Just shut up. She felt rather than heard his laugh.
You ever ride a Harley, Legs?
No, why would I?
Then you're in for a treat. You're gonna want to hold on. To me.
He added after a beat. She put her hands lightly on either side of his waist. But when he revved the engine again, she knew damn well he did it on purpose, she swallowed pride and wrapped her arms around him. Why, she wondered, anyone would want to drive something so noisy, so dangerous, so... Then they were flying down the road, and the wind blew cool and balmy and gorgeous over every inch of her. Okay, a thrill, she admitted, and her heart skipped as he leaned into a turn. A terrifying sort of thrill. Like a roller coaster, which was another thing she could admit was exciting without being a necessary experience in a well-rounded life. The landscape whizzed by. She smelled the rain, the grass, the leather of his jacket, felt the throb of the bike between her legs. Sexual, she admitted. Add arousing to that terrifying thrill, which was surely the reason people rode bikes. When he swung onto her drive, she had to resist flinging her arms up in the air to feel the wind give her palms a slapping high five. As he stopped in front of the house, Del came out.
Mal?
Del?
Parker, where's your car?
Oh, I had a flat just down the road. Mal came by, his tow truck driver's fixing it. I have a consult. Her brother cocked his head, and she saw the corner of his mouth twitch.
Parker, you rode on a motorcycle.
So what? She tried to ease off gracefully, but the heels and skirt added challenge. Mal simply swung off, then plucked her off like a package for delivery. Thank you very much. I have to run, or...
You'll be late.
He unstrapped her purse.
You probably don't want to wear this.
He unclipped the helmet, took it off for her. Thank you.
You said that already, a few times.
Well... Uncharacteristically blank, she turned and hurried toward the house. She heard Del say,
Come on in and have a beer.
And tried not to wince when Mal drawled out a,
Don't mind if I do.
Mal followed Del inside and caught a glimpse of Parker charging up the stairs. The woman had legs, what he thought of as Hollywood legs. The rest of her partners, the cool blonde, the raven-haired beauty, the willowy redhead, stood in the doorway of what he supposed they called a parlor, all talking at once. They made a hell of a picture.
Flat tire, Del said and kept walking.
The Brown mansion had style, Mal thought, had class, had weight, and still managed to feel like a home instead of a museum. He figured that clicked on credit for those who lived there and had lived there. Warm colors, art that drew the eye rather than baffled it, comfortable chairs, glossy tables, and flowers, flowers, and more flowers mixed together with that style, that class and weight. But he never felt as if he should keep his hands in his pockets for fear of getting a fingerprint on something. He'd been through most of the place, excluding Parker's private wing, and wouldn't it be interesting to change that,
and always felt comfortable. Still, the easiest and most welcoming area of the house remained Mrs. Grady's kitchen. The woman herself turned from the stove where she stirred something that turned the air to heaven.
So, it's Malcolm.
How you doing, Mrs. Grady?
Well enough.
She cocked a brow as Dell took a couple beers from the refrigerator.
Take those outside. I don't want you underfoot.
Yes, ma'am,
both men said together.
I suppose you'll be staying for dinner,
she said to Malcolm.
Are you asking?
I will, if Delaney's forgotten his manners.
He just got here,
Dell muttered.
As the other boys have wheedled a meal after the consult, I can stretch things to one more, if he's not picky.
If you're cooking it, Mrs. Grady, I'll be grateful for even a single bite.
You've a clever tongue, don't you, boy?
All the girls say so.
She let out a quick bark of a laugh and tapped her spoon on the edge of a pot.
Outside the pair of you.
Dell opened the fridge, grabbed two more beers. He shoved three of the four on Mal, then flipped out his phone as they walked outside.
Jack, Mal's here. Got beer. Get Carter.
He snapped the phone closed again. He still wore his suit, Mal noted, and though he'd taken off his tie, loosened his collar, he looked every inch the Yale-educated lawyer. He shared his sister's coloring. Thick, dense brown hair, misty blue eyes. Her features were smoother, softer. But anyone with working eyes would make them as siblings. Dell sat, stretched out his legs. His manner tended to be more casual and a hell of a lot less prickly than his sister's, which might have been why they'd become poker buddies, then friends. They popped the bottles, and as Malcolm took the first cold sip, his body relaxed for the first time since he'd picked up his tools 12 hours earlier.
What happened?
Dell asked.
About? Don't play me, Mal. Flat tire my ass. If Parker'd had a flat, you'd have changed it, or she would have, and she wouldn't have ridden home on your bike. She had a flat.
Malcolm took another pull on his beer.
In fact, she had two. They're toast.
He shrugged. He wouldn't lie to a friend.
From what she said and how it looked when I got there, some asshole swerved to avoid a dog. Parker had to cut it hard to the shoulder to avoid getting creamed. Wet road, maybe a little overcompensating. She had herself a little spin, shot out the two left tires. Looked to me from the skid marks the other driver was booking. She wasn't, and he kept right on going.
He left her there? Outrage colored Dell's voice, blew across his face in a storm.
Son of a bitch, did she get the plate, the make? She got nothing, and I can't blame her. It must have happened at the peak of that quick squall, and she was busy trying to get control of her car. I'd say she did pretty well. Didn't hit anything, didn't even pop the airbag. She was shaken up, and she was pissed. And she was extra pissed, thinking she'd be late for her meeting. But not hurt,
Dell said, mostly to himself.
Okay, where? About 6 miles out. Were you out this way on your bike? No.
Damn third degree.
Look, Ma got the call, and she came out to tell me somebody ran Parker off the road, and she was stuck, so I rode out to check on her while Ma dispatched Bill. I appreciate that, Mal.
He glanced over as Mrs. Grady walked out, then set a bowl of pub mix and a plate of olives on the table.
Sop up some of that beer. Here come your boyfriends, she added, nodding across the lawn as the dusk light flickered on. You.
She poked Malcolm in the shoulder.
You can have one more beer, as we won't be sitting down to dinner for another hour or more. Then that's it until you park that monster machine back at your own place.
You and me could go out dancing first.
Careful, she twinkled at him. I've got plenty of moves left in me.
She strolled back into the house, leaving Malcolm grinning.
Bet she does.
He tipped his beer toward Jack and Carter in greeting.
Here's what the doctor ordered.
Jack Cook, the Golden Boy architect and Dell's college pal, opened a beer. The sturdy boots and jeans told Mal Jack had focused on site work rather than office work that day. He made a contrast with Carter's Oxford shirt and khakis. Carter's reading glasses poked out of his shirt pocket and had Malcolm imagining him sitting up in his new study grading papers with his Professor McGuire tweed jacket neatly hung in the closet. He figured they made a motley crew, if he had the meaning right, with Dell in his slick Italian suit, Jack and his work boots,
Carter in his teacher's khakis, and himself. Well, hell, if he'd known he'd get invited to dinner, he'd have changed his pants. Probably. Jack grabbed a handful of pub mix.
What's up?
Somebody ran Parker off the road. Mal came to the rescue.
Is she okay?
Carter set his beer down quickly without drinking.
Is she hurt?
She's fine,
Malcolm said.
Couple shredded tires, no big. And I get a couple of beers and dinner out of it. Pretty good deal.
He talked Parker onto the bike. Jack snorted, glanced from Dell to Mal.
You're not kidding.
Lesser of two evils.
Amused now, Malcolm popped an olive.
My bike or being late for her meeting. Anyway.
He popped another olive.
I think she liked it. I'll have to take her on a real ride.
Right.
Dell let out a half laugh.
Good luck with that. You don't think I can get her back on the bike?
Parker is not what you'd call your motorcycle mama.
Careful what you say about my ma.
Mal considered as he sipped his beer.
I've got 100 that says I can get her back on within 2 weeks for a solid hour.
If you throw away your money like that, I'll have to keep buying your beer.
I'll take your money,
Jack said, and dug into the pub mix.
I have no scruples about taking your money.
Bet.
Malcolm shook on it with Jack.
Still open to you,
he told Dell.
Fine.
As they shook, Dell glanced at Carter.
Do you want in?
No, I don't think... Well, actually, I guess I'll put mine on Malcolm.
Malcolm gave Carter a considering stare.
Maybe you are as smart as you look.
Chapter 3. In Malcolm's experience, most people didn't sit down to a meal of honey-glazed ham, roasted potatoes and baby carrots, and delicately grilled asparagus on your typical Tuesday. And they probably didn't chow down with candlelight, flowers, and wine sparkling in crystal glasses. Then again, the Brown household wasn't most people. He'd have skipped the fancy French wine even without Mrs. Grady's baleful eye. He'd long ago grown out of the stage where he'd knock them back before climbing on his bike. He'd had vague plans to go home, sweat off the long day with a workout, grab a shower, slap something between a couple slices of bread, pop a brew and zone out a while in front of the tube. He'd have been fine with that. But he had to admit this was better. Not just the food, though Jesus, Mrs. Grady could cook, but the place, the whole ball of wax, pretty women, men he liked, the amazing Mrs. Grady, and particularly the always intriguing Parker Brown. She had a face for candlelight, he supposed, elegant but not cold, unless she wanted it to be, sexy but subtle, like a hint of lace under a starched shirt. Then there was that voice, low register, a wisp of smoke, but changeable as the weather from brisk to prim, from warm to ice. She got things done with those tones. Knew, he decided, just how to use them. She'd had to relate the full story of her near miss, and used the casual notes with hints of temper. If he hadn't seen her himself directly after the incident, he might have bought her pretense that she'd never been in any real danger, and was only annoyed with her own overreaction and the other driver's carelessness. Even with the act, the others smothered her with concern, peppered her with more questions, slung outrage at the other driver, and dumped gratitude on him until he felt buried in it. He figured he and Parker hit about the same level of relief when the topic shifted. He liked listening to them, all of them. Group, or, he supposed, more like family, dinner ran long, ran loud, and involved a whole hell of a lot of crosstalk. That was fine with Mal. It meant he didn't have to say much himself, and to his way of thinking, you learned more about people when you let them take the wheel.
What are you going to do with your pool table?
Jack asked Dell.
I haven't decided.
It stirred Malcolm enough to ask.
What's wrong with the pool table?
Nothing. Dell's selling his house and moving in here,
Carter told Mal.
Selling it? When did that happen?
A very recent development.
Dell arched his eyebrows at Mal as he buttered one of Mrs. Grady's fancy crescent rolls.
You want to buy it? What the hell would I do with it? It's big enough for a family of 10 and their grandparents from Iowa.
He considered as he cut another bite of ham.
Any way to just buy the game room?
Afraid not, but I've got a couple ideas on all that.